So, welcome everybody. I want to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn. In memory of Jake's parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov, learning should be in their zechus. So the goal today is to give a little bit of a background into Pirkei Avos, and then start with some analysis of the first Mishnah. The goal going forward is that this will be a weekly shiur. So the weekly shiur on Sunday morning, which will start at 9:15, will be on Pirkei Avos, unless you guys hate it and don't want to do it. Every Sunday morning, Karen and Jake sponsor a breakfast. There's usually some pastries and stuff like that. We can work on what accommodating to what people want. But we do encourage everybody to not just make this a one-time event, but to keep it going forward. So let's just jump into the sources. Let's give a little bit of a background into what the goal of Pirkei Avos is. If you look in source number one, we have a Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, and I have the English Sansino translation here as well. Rav Yehuda says, Hai man deba'i lemahabe chasida. Who wants to be a pious person? If you want to be a pious person, what's the curriculum that I should use? What steps should I take in order to become a pious person? So we have three opinions. Number one, Rav Yehuda says, L'kayem mili dinezikin. You should be very careful, knowing and following all the laws of damages, interpersonal damages of, you know, when I bump into their car, when I am trying to park, you know, is it not really the right thing to just go away and pretend nothing happened? There's laws here that we have to be careful with other people's property and other people's money. And if you want to be a pious person, you have to be very careful about that. Number two, Rava Amar Mili De Avos. If you want to be pious, you have to follow, most commentators understand this, as the teachings of Pirkei Avos. That's how you become a pious person, and that's the route that we're going to try to follow. But Amri La, there are those that say, Mili De Brachos. If you want to be pious, you follow the laws of Brachos, meaning that you recite Brachos, before you eat, on anything, any type of brachos you say, by following all the laws of brachos, that will lead you to become pious. There's a lot of depth, there's a lot to learn in here, but I want to focus on specifically what do these three represent. If you look in source number two, this is the Maharal in Derech Chaim, his commentary to Pirkei Avos, says that if you want to become shalim, if you want to perfect yourself, at least strive for perfection, to improve yourself, there's three parts to our shlemos. There's three parts to our self-improvement that we want, if we want to keep growing. Number one, we need to be shalem, we need to improve our bein adam l'chavera, how our interpersonal relationships are. But that's only one section. There's another section. So this is new, right? We know we have these two categories in our head. We have Bein Adam L'Chavero and Bein Adam L'Makom. So between man and God and man and man. The Maharal adds here a third category. Between man and himself. That we need to be able to improve our relationship with ourself. And you also have to improve your relationship with God. And this is what Pirkei Avos is really dealing with. Barichos, he deals with this a little bit later on, but we're not going to get into that. And he ties this into the Gemara. How does he tie it into the Gemara? So the three things in our Gemara, we had Nezikin, we had Brachos, and we had Avos, are represented within these three categories. Number one, the Amar of Yehuda, Man Debay L'Mahabi Chasid L'Kayim Yilid Nezikin, the whole concept of following the rules of damages, Shlo Yigram Hezek L'Zulaso Mibnei Adam, Zeu Ikra Chasidus Kasher Zulaso Lo Yimse Hezek Mimanu. Right, so what does that represent? That represents the Bein Adam L'Chavero, the interpersonal relationships. Skip a little bit. We're not going to read it inside because we're going out of time. Let's do it outside. Think about it for a second. What do all three of these represent? So we have the Nezikin are going to be the Bein Adam L'Chavero. What's going to be the Brachos? What does Brachos represent? Bein Adam L'Makom, your relationship with God. And therefore, what leaves Pirkei Avos for? Bein Adam L'Atzmo. Right? So the real goal, and I want us to keep this in mind as we continue forward this week, next week, future weeks, is that we're trying to improve ourselves. We're trying to become better people. And the Maharal goes on to explain that these three categories, they're nice to think of them in categories. We like to think in categories, but the truth is they're all interconnected and intertwined. Right? So our relationship with ourselves will affect our relationship with others and will affect our relationship with God. Our relationship with God is going to affect our relationship with ourselves, and it's going to affect our relationship with others. All three of these relationships inform each other, and when we improve one, we improve the other. So we really have to work on all of this. And the truth is, within Pirkei Avos, you have our goal is to self-improve, but also, by definition, self-improve with others, to be better with other people, and also hopefully to improve our relationship with God as well. So that's the framework. This is why we're learning this. So why now? So I'm sure many of us are familiar that there's a custom to read Pirkei Avos when? Between Pesach and Shavuot. So if you go back to the earliest source that talks about this custom, it's Rav Amram Gaon in the 9th century, says that there's a custom, you don't have this on your source sheets, but he says there's a custom to read Pirkei Avos every single Shabbos between Mincha and Maariv. Not during Pesach to Shavuot. Every single Shabbos. There's many different customs that come out of that various variations of this. Some say Pesach to Shavuot, some say Shavuot to Sukkot, some say from Parshas Yisro to Parshas Devarim, some say from Pesach until Shavuot or B'Tamuz, some say in the winter months. So what is all this about? So in terms of, we're going to focus now for the custom that we generally are familiar with from Pesach to Shavuot. So why do we do this now? Why Pirkei Avos now?
Shabbos is long.
Shabbos is long, and what else are you going to do? So the truth is that you will find in the sources that there are these practical reasons as to Shabbos being long. Right, so as Karen said, also we're working towards Shavuos, we're building up. So why Pirkei Avos building up to Shavuos?
Directly related to the Sefirah. We're supposed to perfect ourselves.
Okay, so that's good. That's another answer. We're sort of repairing the Rabbi Akiva's students who had a Ben Adam L'Chavero problem here. We have to fix ourselves. We have to prepare ourselves.
The
sphere from a Kabbalistic perspective. We have building up to Matan Torah. We have, you want to say something else?
Rabbi Akiva.
So we have a lot of reasons. Now, good. Summertime, this is also brought out in the sources. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that when the summer comes, temptation increases. And because of that, that's a time to reflect and improve our own ethics and moral commitment. There's another very interesting thing, and I was talking to Alice about this. She brought it up from the wine perspective. She said that, I hope I'm not giving out any business secrets, but she said that during the cold, rainy winter months, people don't drink as much wine. When the weather gets nice, people start to drink, people go out, they go with their friends, they hang out, they want to have a meal together, so that the wine actually purchases increase. And the truth is that we find in the sources that Pirkei Avos is the same thing. That during the winter cold months, people don't hang out with each other. This is what I read this in, there's a book, it's a very interesting book, written by Rabbi Abraham Chill. I have no idea if he's related to Rabbi Chill. Yeah, so he has a book on a Barbanel on Pirkei Avos. And within this, he quotes lots of other people. I don't remember exactly who said this, but he said that during the winter months, we're all isolated. We're socially isolated. We're inside. We don't want to go outside. It's cold. It's rainy. We're cranky. So we stay by ourselves. And now all of a sudden, it's nights outside. So it's time to go and mingle, re-enter the social sphere, and in order to do that, we have to remind ourselves of the social rules, and that's why during these months we remind ourselves of Pirkei Avos. Why? Yeah, Liz. In South America, they don't learn in South America. I'm just kidding. So you're right. Maybe they do it in a different. I'm not sure what the custom there is. I did see that this is a custom both in Ashkenaz countries and Sephard countries dating back centuries. Okay, why is it called Avos? Why is it called Avos? Pirkei Avos. Anybody? Throw out an answer. Okay, good. So We'll get to everybody. Categories. So we do have a concept of avos and toldos. So we have, we talk about malachos of Shabbos. We have a basic category. The main category is called an av malacha. And then you have the subsidiaries of that, the outgrowths of that are the toldos. And when it comes to Pirkei Avos, some explain that the reason we call it avos is because this is the core. This is the main thrust of what we have to follow. And there's lots of little details, but this is the core of what we need to do. Foundation of our religious life. We're following the traditions of our forefathers. Great. And then finally, you find some people explain that it's called Pirkei Avos is because it's the role of the parent to train a child in their moral and ethical responsibilities. So here, Pirkei Avos is taking on a parental role to help train us in what the right thing to do is. So now, let's go to some more interesting, that was interesting, so I won't rate the interestingness, so additional interesting stuff. Do we have to follow this, right? So we're committed Orthodox Jews, and when we think about committed Orthodox Jews, what do? We follow halacha. Is Pirkei Avos halacha? Is Pirkei Avos binding? Is this law that we must follow? Or is it, listen, it's good advice, they had some wisdom, I could choose to follow this if I want to, and if I decide not to, it's my call, right? You can't fault me for that, maybe, because it's just good advice. It's not binding. So is that true? No. Good. Okay, we're done with that. Right, so that's really the core of the question here. If it's derech ha-chassidut, if it's piety sounds like it's extra. It's extra credit, right? So, I mean, this is a debate when I was in... So Derech Eretz was Kadmah LaTorah. That's good. We will address that in the source in a second. So it's a tension. So on the one hand, let's go with your Derech Eretz Kadmah LaTorah, and let's go with your Chassidus, and there is some sort of tension here. Is it essential? Is it necessary? Or is it just an add-on? Extra credit, the cherry on top, right? There's a debate within, I remember in one of the classes I took at Azrieli in the Graduate School of Education at Yeshiva University, I remember once came up, is it right to grade children on their behavior, right? So when we give a report card, teachers often incorporate the child's behavior within their grade. And there's some pushback to that and say, why are you grading me on my behavior? Do I know the material? Do I not know the material? So I'm a little chutzpahdik. That shouldn't make me not go into college, right? So you should give me my 100 because I got 100s in all the tests. And the fact that I talk back to you is irrelevant, right? So that's a debate. I didn't take a poll of teachers, but from at least when I was in school, I vaguely remember teachers do taking that into account, and I hope that, I'm not sure if that helped me or not, or hurt me, but so this type of question is that, is this required? Is this something that I need to do, or is it just extra credits? Let's jump into, yes, Rabbi Shaloni.
The statement, the person who wishes to be a Hasid should do that, whoever wishes.
Right, it sounds like it's an option. It sounds right, but so the question though is that is mili dinazikin optional? Right? Is my obligations if I do damages, is that optional? Is brachos optional? Right? So it's, you're right, but we have to understand it better. But just to say that because it says if you want to do this to count, it is not the best proof because of that. We have to understand it. This is not so clear what the Gemara means. When I say we have to understand it, I'm not sure we're going to understand it right now. But let's jump into a source here. Source number 3 is the actual Mishnah, first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and we'll see why it's relevant to this question. So the Mishnah says, Moshe kibal Torah miSinai, u'masar liYoshua v'Yoshua lezakenim. So Moshe received the Torah. And we could ask so many questions on this, and maybe later if we have time, we'll delve into this a little bit more. But Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. What does it mean from Sinai? Sinai gave him the Torah? So Hashem. So why does it say Sinai? So we're not answering that now, we're just raising the question. And then it says, U'masra liYoshua. He gave it over to Yoshua. So we switch, just again pointing out interesting things here, we switch from kibel, from received, to masra, to giving over. So we switch the language. Yoshua gave it over to the Zakanim, to the elders. Vizakanim gave it over to the Nevi'im, to the prophets. So Nevi'im, Masrua, gave it over to the Anshei Knesses HaGedola, to the men of the great assembly, and we'll talk about them either later today or perhaps next week. Haim amru shlosha dvarim. They said three things, and we'll get to those three things later. But let's focus on the fact, is why does Perkei Avos start with this chain of tradition? Right? We don't start regular Mishnayos with chains of tradition. We don't say, Moshe kibal Torah miSinai, therefore, you know, keep Shabbos. Moshe kibal Torah miSinai, gave it to Yeshua, gave it to his kingdom, gave it to his kid, etc. Therefore, keep Kashrus. So why is it that here, before Perkei Avos, we have to tell you, just to remind you, we have a tradition that goes all the way back. What is it about Perkei Avos? So source number four, the Meiri, says the following. B'kodim shenatzil bira masachta, beforehand, before we explain the entire, he's going to go through each perek and each Mishnah, royalis oris, this is the introduction. Ma'isa siba lo dia seder kabbalah. Why do we need to give you this tradition? Ish mi pi ish v'yir ali. So the following is his explanations. B'tshuva zeh shelo nasa ela lamayla sa mesechta. So it's to show us the importance of this mesechta. V'hu shemitzad she'inyona kolulim dvarim lo tavo raya pratis min amikros. It's not easy to bring up pasuk. We don't bring verses. When it comes to other mitzvos, there are verses. We know where to look in the Torah, and the Torah says, this is what you do. So I don't need to start the laws of kashra saying, Moshe got the Torah, etc., because I know there's a pasuk. Here there's no psukim. V'lo midarkei ha-mechkar v'ha-hekesh u'shara midos k'derech shara drachim ha-talmudim. This is unique. Perkei Avos is unique within Talmudic discussions. Rak ziruz ha-midos chamudos is telling you to encourage you to have good character. V'azar ha-midos ha-nimasos, and to stay away from bad character. Ula yachshav alein she'ein ha-midos ha-mishubachos kuf mitzvah v'lo ha-minagonos kuf avera v'yakul inyanam. So you might think, it's not really that important. You can't give me, Rabbi, give me a pasuk. Is it written in the Torah? Is it not written in the Torah? If it's not, leave me alone. So the Meiri saying is because of that, because somebody might come to that conclusion, and there would be v'yavozu l'secha mileya mimeyosei madrichos adam l'emes u'lahafcho k'moshe b'yarnu. So the tshuva to this, just paraphrasing the end, is that that's why we have to start with this tradition. Because there's no deeply rooted in the text, I have to remind you that it still is. This is a tradition that gets passed on from generation to generation. Now the question is, does that mean that, okay, so Moshe did it, Yeshua did it, does that mean it's obligatory? Does that mean I have to do it? Pasuk, yes, I get it. But tradition, nice, do I have to follow the tradition? We'll get back to source number 5 and 6 in a second. Let's move away from the sources for a second and just broaden the conversation outside. So, is good character a mitzvah? Maybe that's a good question. Who said it's not a mitzvah? Maybe me having good midos is obligatory. Is there a pasuk in the Torah that tells me to have good midos? Is there a pasuk? Okay, so Rabbi Shaloni says that there is a pasuk and Sefer Dvarim that says that you should do the right and the good thing in the eyes of God. And there's a famous Ramban who says that says that we have to follow the ethical commandments that aren't explicitly written. The Ramban says that it would be impossible, for the Torah to give you every single detail of every single permutation of your interpersonal relationships for the rest of your life. And because of that, the Torah instead gives you a general statement. Do what's right and what's good. But here's my question to you. What's right and what's good? How do you figure that out? So if you looked in the Ramban says that the Torah does give you some. The Torah is not absent of interpersonal laws. There are ways we have to treat our fellow person. So what we need to do is we have to look at those specific laws and then make a broad general theory based on those laws, predicting what my behavior should be in certain situations. So it's not an exact science. It's not an exact law book. There is no Shulchan Aruch of Midos, although there actually is. I found a book that is called Shulchan Aruch of Midos. But from a real traditional perspective, there is no law code of having character. But if you go and you search the Torah, you do find general psukim that say you should be a good person. You should treat others like yourself, right? And you have other psukim. The Rambam says that you do have a commandment to have good midos, and that's from a different pasuk. The pasuk is va'alafta bedrachav. What does va'alafta bedrachav mean? To walk in God's way. What does that mean, to walk in God's ways? So just like God shows us within the Torah that He's compassionate, so too we should be compassionate. The Rambam says all of the things that we find God being All of the good qualities that we find God representing within the Torah, we have an obligation to follow in His ways. This is a biblical commandment. V'halachta b'drachav, to follow in God's good character, as it were. So it's not just good advice necessarily. There's laws here. There are psukim. Right? There's a famous statement of Rabbi Chaim Vital, who's a famous Kabbalist. And he says, and people quote this all the time, and I sort of don't understand it fully, because it sort of doesn't go with the Rambam. So let me tell you what he says. So what does Rabbi Chaim Vital says? Rabbi Chaim Vital asks the question, why isn't, or the premise of the question is, why isn't there a mitzvah to have good midos? Right, that's the premise of his question. And his answer is that it's the prerequisite. You can't follow Torah laws without good midos. It's not going to work. If you're a bad person inside, you're not going to have a relationship with God. You're not going to have a relationship with your friends. You're not going to follow the mitzvah. You're just not going to do it. So it's a prerequisite to all the commands. And it's a nice answer. I'm just pointing out, I don't have a good answer to this question, is that the Rambam says there is a mitzvah. Right? Rav Chaim Vital says there's no mitzvah, it's a prerequisite. Beautiful idea. The Rambam says it is a mitzvah. It's v'alafta b'drachot. So my only point here, without giving perfect answers to this, is that there's a tension. Is it a mitzvah? Is it not a mitzvah? Is it binding? Is it not binding? If we're going to assume that it is a mitzvah, so now how do I follow it? If there's no Shulchan Aruch, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? So perhaps the answer, and there's a lot of discussion on this, but I'll just give you one brief possibility. This is suggested by Rabbi Yehuda Leo Levy. He's a rabbi and professor in Eretz Yisrael. He's a big proponent of learning Torah and science. He's a tremendous scientist, does stuff that I don't even know what it means. But he suggests that when it comes to this distinction that we have between halacha and maybe we call it agada or character or morals, they're both binding. They're both obligatory. You can't say, I don't want to be a good person. That's not an option. So what's the difference? The difference is one is subjective and one's objective. When it comes to halacha, halacha is objective. Halacha is, these are the rules, this is what you follow. But I can't, echoing the Ramban, I cannot tell you what you should do in the 21st century when somebody comes to you and cuts you off while you're driving your car. Right? I can't tell you in a halachic code that this should be your emotional, behavioral, and cognitive reaction. I just can't do it. There's too much variation. There's too much variation within situations, scenarios, and there's also too much variation within personalities. Right? We know that we're all different. We all have different personalities. And what would be a moral failure for me or you might not be a moral failure for somebody else. There are rules, right? Nobody can kill, nobody can steal. Those are the laws. But when it comes to the character, the personality, that type of stuff, it's obligatory. But I can't tell you exactly what to do. I can't give you exact, precise definitions and laws. You, subjectively, have to find your place, and you have to find out where you have to grow. So as much as this, you know, shir and series is going to be about looking at sources, the most important part of all of this is us internalizing this for ourselves. How are we going to apply this, knowing ourselves? How are we going to then go and improve on what we do? How do we improve in our midos? It's not up to a code. It's not up to a textbook. It's up to us taking the principles and applying it to our own lives. I think it's a scary idea, because it's much easier to go, tell me what the halacha is and I'll do it. Here, there's personal responsibility. Here, we have to actually get in touch with who we are. And that's pretty scary. But that's what Perkei Avos is. That's what our moral and ethical obligations are based on. Okay? I'm not saying this is the only way to approach it, but that's one approach. Now, moving on to the next topic. Any brief questions on that subject? The next subject's related. Yeah.
So what you said, Torah does tell us how to behave, and sometimes how to think, and sometimes even how to feel. You have to bring up it. Tells us about love.
Uh-huh.
But there aren't ordained penalties per se. It's not as if you have to bring a cargo and we have to do something like that. There may be some displeasure. It's not God's will.
Right.
Maybe it's pleasing beings, but maybe it's a different
So it's a good suggestion. I will point out, though, that there is a statement that says, and within this discussion, there's a lot of philosophical discussion on this. So I have a book called Contemporary Jewish Ethics, and there's a good 150 pages on this topic. Half of the stuff I don't really understand, but one of the sources that they bring is that the Gemara says that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. I believe I'm quoting the Gemara correctly. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Why? And we all know lots of different reasons. But one of this Gemara is saying is because they didn't follow the spirit of the law. They didn't go above and beyond the Lefnim Meshuras HaDin. And that, so there is a punishment, right? So again, that's a broader sort of national punishment. But you are right that God could command emotions, could command behavior, can command thinking. And that's a whole discussion into itself, which perhaps we'll get to in the future. Some people say, how can you command what you're feeling? But that doesn't mean there's going to be a punishment for it. Because how can I, there might be a divine life punishment for it. I do also get back, and maybe this is just a nice point that's not 100% accurate, but the punishment might be what's called, in psychology, a natural consequence, right? So sometimes when we have, when we try to punish a child or reinforce a child, we try to impose external punishments on them, right? So you don't do your homework, so you come home, and I'm going to say you can't watch TV, right? So that's an external punishment. There's a natural consequence here of that if you don't do your homework, you're going to fail your class, right? You're not going to do well. Now, the kid might not care about that, but there are things that we do when we're not nice to other people, or we don't know, or we're not nice to ourselves, or we're not nice to God, or we don't have that, again, that ethical and moral standing that we're trying to, the character we're trying to work on, there's a natural consequence to that. And that natural consequence is that we just don't live a nice and good, fulfilling life. We're probably going to be bitter and resentful. So you're right, there's no divine punishment, but there is a quote-unquote punishment in the sense that our life's not as fulfilled as it could be. Okay, so that's a little, quick break.
I just want to say that there's a certain baseline beyond which you can't have expectations of individual performing beyond that. Everybody goes and approaches the mitzvah differently, or the idea of the mitzvah of charity. Some will say, what's the minimum? And some will go and want to give you something anonymously. You can't have the same expectation of every individual to do on the same level.
Right, and the truth is, we are sort of oversimplifying, and this is a caveat that don't get lost in if it's too, we're adding too many layers here. To say so simply that halacha is just completely objective is also sort of not 100% true. Halacha could be subjective in some states. We have different rules, as you're pointing out. You have different rules in some halachos depending on who you are, right? There's some people who do maybe have more chumras, and some people maybe there's more kula here because of your level of observance, maybe, or your level of just your financial ability. So there is subjectivity within halacha as well, but it still follows rules. It still follows, it's like, if you are poor, go to this ruling. If you have money, go to this ruling, But it's not a completely objective endeavor. Quick. So let's save it to the end because we're going to run out of time. All right, so one more interesting question, which I'm not sure we're going to have a nice, tight answer at the end, that in this Contemporary Jewish Ethics book they discuss also at length, is we go through this whole tradition, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where does our ethics and morals come from? Right? Why do we have, we went through all these psukim and everything, but is it innate? Is it inborn? Do we all have a natural inclination to be ethical and moral? Is that why we do it? And this is a big philosophical question. Should we only do things sort of like lishma because it's the nice thing to do? It's the right thing to do? Or is it that because God told me to do it? And if you look, and this is a big debate, if you look at source number 5, the Bartanura's classical commentary on all Mishnayos, in the first comment he has here in Perkei Avos, he says, and I'm just going to read the English to save time, this is quoted by Rabbi Blythe in one of his essays on is there an ethic outside of Torah? Is there natural morality, as sometimes it's called? So he writes, I declare that because this tractate is not predicated upon explication of any particular commandment of the Torah, as are other tractates of the Mishnah, rather consists in its entirety of moral maxims and ethical qualities. And since the wise men of the nations of the world also composed works according to, quote, the fancies of their hearts, dealing with ethical conduct, and hardly he uses the word in the Hebrew, it's shebadu milibam. The translation here is the fancies of their hearts. Sounds like they're I don't like the translation that much. I'm not an expert on this stuff, but it sounds almost like it's they're making it up, you know, out of their hearts. They're just making it up. I don't think that's a fair thing to say about secular philosophers. I don't think they're making it up. I think they firmly believe that the way that you go about ethics and morality is through your own lave here probably means not heart, but mind. You go through rational introspection or intuitive ethics. You go through what you think is right. And again, these are huge debates and lots of different ethical theories. So you look at all these secular philosophers and they're doing this, they're making this stuff up, basically. Therefore, the Tana, continuing, began this tractate with the words, Moses received the Torah from Sinai, indicating that the ethical qualities and moral maxims which are contained in this tractate were not the fancies of the sages of the Mishnah, but that even they were revealed at Sinai. So the Bartanura is coming and saying explicitly that all of these ethics and morals that we're teaching you is not because we think these are the right things to do because we thought about it, because we're convinced that these are the right things to do. This is Mesorah. This is tradition. This is divine morality. We're doing this because God told us to do it. And that's why in the beginning of the tractate, answering the question we asked before, we have to go through this whole delineation of Moshe Kibbutz, because it's not made up. This wasn't that the sages, lived a good life and tried to experiment to see what the best way of living was. This is passed on from generation to generation, divine morality, divine ethics.
Can we argue, we focused on the other nations coming up with some of these ethical guidelines, can we say that this was divine inspired at the time of creation that preceded Sinai?
Yeah, so we can spend days on this, and I'll give a little bit of a brief overview of questions that we have to ask ourselves about this, but we're not going to deal with all of them. So what does that mean? So that means what happened before the Torah? If all of our ethics and morals came from the Torah, so why was Avram saying, Ashofei kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat, that God doesn't do justice? Where does he get that from? He didn't have the Torah. Why is Sodom punished for their sins, for being unethical and immoral, if they had no Torah telling them what to do? So there seems to be that there is, why is Cain, punished for his sins? How did he know what to do? So there seems to be sources indicating that there is a natural morality. There is a built-in thing that we should figure this out. And there's lots of cool experiments, and I encourage you to YouTube this. It's a cute little 4 or 5 minute clip. In Yale, they're studying, how do you know, it's basically a nature versus nurture question. How do we know if our ethics and morals come from this built-in system that God put into our brain? So it's nature, it's genetics, it's built in there. Or is it nurture, that it's learned from your environment? So how do you figure that out? So one of the experiments that they do is they take like little teeny babies, 6 months old, and they do these, they have these puppets. And you basically have somebody playing out a good puppet and a bad puppet. And the good puppet helps another puppet in need, and the bad puppet does something mean to the other puppet in need. And what they go is they then present these two puppets to these little teeny babies, and 80% of the babies end up going for the good puppet. The puppet's same in every single way except the color of good puppet versus bad puppet. They all choose the good puppet. And they do variations of this where they have the bad puppet and the good puppet then giving the baby some sort of treat, food. And the baby takes the treat from the good puppet, even if the bad puppet offers more. So if the bad puppet offers two cookies, the good puppet offers one cookie, the baby, again, it's around 80% of the time, goes for the one cookie of the good puppet. Because we have, what they're arguing is, we have this natural aversion to meanness. And that morality from this argument is built in from when we're a little baby. Now, they did find that if the bad puppet gave the baby 8 crackers versus the 1 cracker, the baby took the 8 crackers. So we all have our limits. But so the question here is that, again, and I'm not telling you this is a conclusive answer, but this really, is it built in? Is that why we do it? Or is it because of divine commandment? There's a, I'll get to you in a second, Helen. There's a Gemara, if you look in Source 7, it's a famous Gemara that's always quoted in this context. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ilmalei lo nitna Torah, if the Torah was not given, Hainu lemeidim tznius mechatul. We would learn modesty from a cat. The gezel min amala, stealing, meaning not stealing, from ants. Varayos miyona. We learn about modesty or good sexual ethics from the dove. And good man, it's cut off from the Hebrew, but good manners from the rooster. Now, you got to take this Gemara and also question, so what does that mean? The Torah was given. So, if the Torah wasn't given, I would have looked to the animal world and seen this natural morality and said, I want to copy that. Maybe I wanted to copy a lion, right? Maybe I wanted to copy a fox, right? So why pick these? So, this Gemara is used, but it's used on both sides of this debate and saying that you can't really come to a conclusive conclusion just from this one source. If you look at source number 6, the Maharal, who we saw before, does have an interesting statement that gets to the binding issue. Source number 6 on the same page. Don't turn the page. It's right over source number 7. It's just stapled, so you can't see it. Say it says 6. Okay? The same page as source number 7, the source right on top of it. The Maharal says, Od ki kol divrei musar shehi derech eretz, all of this musar that we're talking about, all of this good ethical behavior, the hasechel notein, v'adas mechayev. This makes sense. This, if you think about it, this is the rational thing to do, and he even says it's mechayev, it's obligatory. So the Maharal says that, yeah, we're going to go through Pirkei Avos, but this is binding regardless of mitzvah, not mitzvah. This is just, it makes sense. This is built in. We got to know this. That's the Maharal's answer. Again, not everybody agrees with this, and it's a big debate. I just wanted to bring it to your attention as to some of the sources. And again, if you look in that Contemporary Jewish Ethics, he talks about it. There's also on Virtual Based Medrash by Gush Har Etzion. They have, it's a good resource in general. If you want to learn on your own, they have thousands and thousands and thousands of well, I guess not. I probably oversold the thousands a little bit. But they have lots and lots and lots of series of Shirim from their Rebbeim, and there's a series on this topic where he gets into your point from before about distinction between the Sinai command and the covenants that we expressed or that we took on throughout the Torah, whether it was Bris Avos, the Bris at Har Sinai. Also, there was some sort of covenant that wasn't just here's the laws. There was some other things involved. Fascinating stuff. We'll save it for another time. Helen, you still? Yeah.
Before Sinai, we actually did have rules because we had the laws of Noah also.
Right. Shev Mitzvah B'nei Noach. Good. So that gets to the natural morality question. But they would say that's divine. But the question is, how do they know that's divine if they don't sort of, they didn't get the memo? You know, so.
Maybe Noah had it from Hashem.
Right, but then again, this is all good things to think about. Well, where I think we'll end up, and again, I'm not a philosopher, where I think we'll end up at the end of this discussion is that we're just going to have answers to every single possible thing, and it's great, and we should think about it. We should think about all the sources. When I see people who have IQs of 170, or higher than that, if that's possible, I don't know. Is 170 the highest? Do you go higher? I don't know. That's like 15, 30, 45, 60, like 4 or 5 standard deviations above the mean, whatever it is. When you have really high IQs and you're fighting this out and you guys can't figure it out, like, I'll just take it that I'm not going to get to a conclusive answer to this. And, you know, reiterating what I said yesterday during the intro is that's why it's good to always talk in nuance and realize that we don't know the answers to everything. Right? There's lots of opinions out there, and we're not going to be able to get to the core and say, like, this is what the answer is. Yeah?
Maybe if you use the phrase of functioning society with regard to this, with a lot of these things, you won't have a functioning society, and that's why the novel was brought back. Because society was no longer functioning on a level that it could keep going.
Right. So if you go to ethical theory, so one of the theories is that this is just, you know, this is how society is going to function. Forget about me as a person, whether or not I have a built-in ethics, I don't have built-in ethics. We as a society have to create din, we have to create laws, because otherwise society is not going to run. That's sort of a practical way of looking at it, and that's definitely a valuable and one of the methods we can look into. Yes?
Okay, I think that all those midot are written in the Torah, somewhere. It's all over the place. Torah, Tanakh, And Boaz says shalom to everybody. Moshe Rabbeinu was anav, Avram machnis ochim. There are stories and rules and this, but it's all over the place. You cannot find it. What Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did, he put it all in a book. He collected all those midot together so we can study them and we can work on our characters. He just puts it together.
Yeah, and 100%. It's another way of looking at this, and I think it's in consonant with what we're saying, is that it's all, right, you could mine the Torah for all of these good ethical behaviors. You have to do, sometimes it's not so clear. You have to do a close reading. Because sometimes you'll see behaviors in Tanakh, and it's not just that we look at the good behaviors and we see that there was good positive consequences. We also probably more often than the good behaviors, we see the bad behaviors, and we have to see what the consequences of those were, and we learn to stay away from those. But you're right, it could all be there. Now, with the caveat that we would have to, we can keep that in mind in the intro to Perkei Avos, and keep all these things in mind in the intro to Perkei Avos, as we actually go through Perkei Avos, we have to see if it actually fits. I mean, there's probably going to be something within these five prakim, the six ones added as a brice, that's not really part of Perkei Avos, but we'll do it also. I don't know how many years we'll get to that. But, you know, the question is every single thing in there, you know, from Tanakh? Or is there, you know, or is it Masorah? All right, so we finished part one. One second. We finished part one. We did not do part two or three, but we're running out of time. So I'm going to wind down. Next week, I'll take a few questions before we end. We're going to continue next week. I don't know what you guys' schedules are. It's 9:15. Give me feedback if you plan on coming or not, because you know we need to know how to set up and what to do and what to buy. 9:15. We're gonna go. You can come 1 week. You can miss a week. You go. We'll see. We'll figure it out. Yeah. So I think we're gonna go to. We're probably gonna do 45 minutes or so. Maybe we'll try to get out by 10, so people can go on with their day. Again, give us feedback because we want to know what people want. Right? We want to teach. I want to teach. I want to learn with you. I want to know what is conducive for your schedules, if possible, what you're interested in learning, what stuff you want me to stay away from, what stuff you want me to focus on. You have any questions? This is a collaborative process, and we should try to keep momentum as a shul, both for all of the reasons why we mentioned in the beginning as why Perkei Avos is important during this time period. But I'm with the notion that Perkei Avos is good to learn all year round. This is really the essence of our relationships with ourself, with others, with God. This is it. This is the core, and we need to work on it. And I do encourage to self-learn also. Perkei Avos is great for self-learning because there's so many books out there, regardless of how much Hebrew you know. There's dozens of books in English on every single possible approach to Perkei Avos, psychological approaches, law, whatever it is. There's so many things out there. Learn. Let's learn together. Bring your comments. Bring your own knowledge, bring your own experiences to the shiur, and then perhaps more importantly, bring it to yourself. Reflect, and hopefully we'll all learn together to continue to grow in all three, Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Chavero, Ben Adam L'Atzmo. We'll take a few questions. Yeah. So it's with General Mishnayos, which is written down somewhere around the year 200 CE, that's Rida Nasi. You got to go through that history over there. Yeah, and we'll do a mezumah before we leave. Yeah.
What about during the Yat HaOlam? First of all, we had Bayar Hashem Kitov during the creation, and then of course it begs the question of the Eitz HaDa'at Tov V'Ra in Gan Eden. So where does that come into play with all of this?
It's all there. So the question is, I don't think anybody denies that there's some within the Torah sources. Forget about the sacred sources for now. I don't think anybody denies within the Torah sources there is some natural expectation that you're going to behave a certain way. What those who follow a halachic positivism, which is basically everything's based on halacha, nothing's based on anything else. If it's in the law, it's in the law. If not, not. What they'll say is that all of these ethics and good behaviors and morals, again, show me the Shulchan Aruch, show me where it is, I'll do it. Once, you're going to tell me, Eitz Adas, Tovarah, this, that, whatever. Once the Torah was given, I follow the Torah. Like, once the laws were given, I follow the laws. That presupposes everything. So again, a huge discussion, and maybe we could have another shir going into details of this specific. Just wanted to raise the issue for now, but it is a pretty fascinating topic. Just to give you an overview of what we'll do next, you have a question, please? No? Just to give you an overview of what we're going to do next week, we're going to go start talking about the Anshei Knesset Gedola, where they were in a historical context, which helps us understand what they taught. We'll see some interesting enactments and decrees that they made. And then we're going to get some close readings of the lessons that they talk about. And there's a lot to gain here, there's a lot to learn, and a lot to improve. Thank you again to Karen and Jake, and thank you all for coming. Yeah, we're going to use these for next week. Okay.